obviously a very disappointing end to what was a great regular season and a great playoff series, which obviously didn't get the result we wanted. So extremely disappointed. We're not going to make any excuses. I thought our players battled hard. I thought that they played well. And they lost to a great hockey team. As players, management, and ownership, we share in everybody's frustration in not getting the job done. Certainly, as we look forward to next year, there's always going to be new faces. That being said, we will not be making changes just simply for the sake of saying that we made changes. With that, I think that Kyle built a very good hockey team. I think he made excellent adjustments along the way. And I think Sheldon is an excellent coach. As we look forward to next year and getting to work toward next year, I think it's important to sort of state that I see both of them as being extremely important in getting us to the next level, so that when we do approach next year and we do come back, that we are ready to take that next step. As Kyle had said to the players today, the work for next year begins right now.
I don't know that I've ever felt that it's best to detract some of your very best players to spread the dollars around players who aren't as good.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. Happy Wednesday to you all here in the city of Toronto and around the world, listening to the Fan Morning Show with J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, and Blake Murphy. I got to tell you, so this morning I woke up and was in a pretty good mood, and I thought to myself, this is what sucks about not doing a show right after something happens, right? It's that you kind of lose a little. You start to rationalize things. You start to cool off. You start to calm down. And maybe it's not as raw, visceral, and relatable, whatever word you want to use. Then I hear that, and less good, less good of a morning. It's not so much all of the message. Some of it is nitpicking on days like today, where you hear these exit interviews, and the common refrain is, what do you want them to say? You want them to say that they suck, and that they should quit, they shouldn't do their jobs. And after answers like that, I go, yeah, I do. We're not going to make excuses, followed by a two-minute rant about all your excuses. We share in your frustration. That's like, you have a corporate job, you have a job of any nature, and you have somebody above you who is like, hey, here is a bunch of poop that we are going to shovel down your way. But we, as the organization, share in your frustration. You will be absorbing all of the extra work. You will be absorbing all of the suffering. You will be absorbing all of the difficulty. But we share in your frustration. That was Brendan Shanahan. I cannot believe the lack of tone or the missed tone yesterday. Even for I've done these shows so many times, the Leafs exit interview show. I don't understand how those guys could miss the tone so hard when they've had so many practices. Am I insane? Am I nuts for feeling this way?
Honestly, if you had played the audio from last year's media day and played the audio from this year's media day, worse, but similar. Like, there was not a lot of a tone that had changed or a shift of I heard Killer Instinct again and was threw up. But the complacency and the tiny little excuses that end up trying to be positive spins, like we believe, we came close, or the effort was there, we grew, and tremendous growth this season, and we're one shot away. Like, that was the buzzy little catchphrases throughout everybody that stood in front of the microphone. And yes, you're right. What do we want them to say? Tear it down, we're the worst team in the league. No, but maybe a little bit of frustrations or maybe, honesty.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe just a nice. Little bit of non – like those guys, I'm sorry, that those guys came off as completely arrogant yesterday. I thought that Mitch Marner got killed last year by everybody for the way that he handled his media day because he came out and he was defensive and he was – yeah, completely disengaged from everything. And Shanahan standing up there smirking as he's being asked questions about people in this market and going, nobody gets complacent in this market, as he's telling you that he's running it back with the same group and that they're not going to make changes for the sake of changes. Like, Shanahan in years past has had some kinds of admissions about difficulties with the roster. These guys were smug, they were arrogant, and they stood up there and they basically told everybody, you're all idiots. Okay, we run the hockey team up here, and we had a great season, and we're proud of it, and we don't really care what you guys think, and we had one bad luck, and we're not going to make excuses, but we played really hard, and everybody was great, and the philosophy is great, and everything is fine, and we're not going to make changes for the sake of changes, and let's smirk, and then we'll walk off the stage. And this is the problem with these guys, is they are completely disconnected from this fan base, and they have ground unbelievable amount of blue and white disease, which is what these guys were supposed to combat in the first place. And you saw that, and it was pervasive. And this is the issue with corporate structures, is that you lose connection to the fans. And that is the issue here today, is you're not supposed to make every move for them, but you're supposed to be able to relate to them. And those two guys in the ivory tower have completely lost every ounce, every shred of credibility with this group, the way that they handle stuff like this. That was awful. What an awful display after this fan base has gone through this yet again.
And here's the thing. The people who say, well, what do you want them to say? Do you want them to be upset and stuff like that? Look, what you do, like the end of season exit interviews have no purpose other than fan service and keeping the media, like keeping the media happy a little bit, giving us some off-season content. Like that is league-wide and sports-wide. That's the point. No one is going to, if Kyle Dubas and Brandon Shanahan and Sheldon Keefe are upset and frustrated or a little more loose with their quotes on exit interview day, it's not as if come July 1st, they go to sign a free agent and the league's like, well, you said this back on May 17th and you said that you were going to make big changes. This isn't a big enough change. You can't do that. Or you go to make a trade and another general manager's like, ooh, actually, that's not what you said the plan was May 17th, so we can't do that. It's not – you're not beholden to – like, I don't want a front office that's going to head into the entire offseason unreasonable and acting on tilt emotionally, but that exit interview day is fan service. It's a PR day. It's the same thing. Like, we go into – and I'll use the Raptors as an example, not to compare across sports, but because I've been at a lot of exit interview days for the Raptors, and I haven't been for the Leafs. Yesterday was the first one I've really, you know, been through. But on the Raptors side, there's at least an understanding of what the purpose of those is. And it's, hey, yeah, Masai will make fun of the entire ordeal every single year, but he'll answer questions and he'll talk passionately. And look, they could learn a lesson from Masai, because Masai is the king of giving an engaging hour-long exit interview with lots of quotes that you go back and look at after. And it's like, wait a second, he said nothing about the actual plan, but you come out of there with the feeling that this guy hated losing that series or losing that season or whatever as much as you did. That was the case in 2015, 2017, 2018. You came out of those, less so the last few years because Tampa tank and all that stuff, and like his kind of odd framing this year of like, even when we lost in the Tampa year, we won because Scotty Barnes. But 2015, 2017, 2018, those are the Raptors years that were most parallel with the Leafs have been going through. And you go back and look at some of those exit interviews from him, from Casey, from Kyle and DeMar, and you could feel that those people disliked losing as much as you did. And yeah, it's different personalities and stuff, but there's also an understanding there that, hey, this is a fan service day. We're not beholden to any roster moves because we were emotional on this day. I think sometimes you got to give the fans a little bit of a bone when it comes to that frustration and meet their energy a little bit, even if it's not going to dictate your strategy.
No kidding. That's what I'm saying, is we share your frustration to go out here on
it's a
PR
notes
day,
app apology.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's truly like you want so little but you just want an acknowledgement. Like, again, Brendan Shanahan, do you have any idea? Do you have any clue? Do you have any understanding of a fan? Have either you or Kyle Dubas actually, like, what is your relationship with this fan base? What is this organization's relationship with this fan base? This feels like complete severing as it has gone on, like, throughout this pandemic and throughout these guys' tenure here. Like, your job is to create a winning hockey team, completely understandable, and everything else that falls under, especially Brendan Shanahan's role. But yesterday, I could not get over how completely lost and how completely arrogant these guys were who have failed to get out of the first round. Like, this core has been together now for years. I saw someone who brought up, like, remember when they lost to Washington? How much optimism was around this core? How much belief could happen here? Yeah, there's been some bad bounces along the way. There have been some tough breaks in that series against Tampa. There is positivity to take from it. You know, those guys are even correct in some of their assertions, right? Like, no one's saying make changes just for the sake of changes. But to kind of stand up there and be defiant, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the guy that they put the blame at years ago, which is Mike Babcock. Those guys sounded like Mike Babcock. They went up there and they went, well, you know, you don't really know the game. You know, you don't really, we're trying to make good men. We're trying to build a good hockey club.
I think your Babcock impression is my favorite thing that you do on the show. I wish he was back here so we could get it every day.
Yeah, you're not really understanding. I'll coach the team. You write about the team. I'll coach the team. You be a fan of the team, the Toronto Maple Leafs. We're in the business to make a good man. That was those guys yesterday. I thought Sheldon Keefe acquitted himself fairly well, but I just, those two in particular, I just thought a horrible showing.
Did you not find some of the player comments to be a little Babcocky too? Like, I almost got the feeling that, like, Shoot, they did the coaches in the wrong order.
I thought that Jason Spezza starting off was the emotional tone of all of this, where this guy is reflecting, talking about what else could he have done. He's going, what else could I have done? I'm reflecting. You can feel, he says, I'm a little lost right now. He's got clear heartbreak in his voice as he's talking about this franchise. And I know that some people are going, that's not what I care about. I care about winning. I don't care about the emotions of this thing. No, I do. I want people who care about this organization and who want to win so badly with the Toronto Maple Leafs. No one else, right? When Spezza says, this is the only place I'll play, that matters to me with a fan base like this. Like, when Brendan Shanahan goes up there and tells you that, oh, that's the benefit of playing in Canada, is you can't take your foot off the pedal, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you can, Brendan, because you've been a loser ever since you got here, and you're still standing at that podium and apparently not feeling any stresses about your job. So you can take all the pressure off you want, bud, but the rest of them, they don't have the same luxury. Spezza's career is coming to an end, and the guy is sick, completely heartsick about where he's at and where this team was at. And some of those other guys kind of came through, and you could feel it with them too. Morgan Riley seemed pretty distraught with all of it. Jake Muzzin seemed pretty heartbroken over it. I don't really evaluate so much each guy because I think that they all deal with that in their kind of different ways. They're at different points in their careers. But I thought at least the players kind of owned up to a lot. And then some of it's just like same thing, PR messaging, right? Where they get the same stuff. But when you show just that little bit of compassion, that little bit of human, like that little bit of humanity, that remembering where you're from, which is all you guys started off just as hockey fans, right? All of you guys were John Tavares in your pajamas at one point, rooting for the Toronto Maple Leafs. All of you guys should just love this game and care about this game and care about the people who love this city and this team. And at least for me, the players showed, like, we didn't get this job done. We are not at all proud of this whatsoever. We will come back and we will try and be better. I thought Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas were like, this is the best we've done, and we're the proudest of it, and we don't care that it's the first round. We just were thrilled with the idea that guys had career regular seasons. And we're, again, there was so many quotes from them where they would say, this isn't an excuse, but here's all of our excuses for it, and no actual, nothing. There was nothing from either of them that showed, like, oh, crap, maybe something might be wrong here, or maybe we should figure something else out.
So the thing that we talked about yesterday is, what did we want from this? And I definitely feel like I'm left wanting a lot more. But some sort of plan. And I thought it was almost shocking when Shanahan and Dubas started the press conference, and first thing he did was say, hey, by the way, don't even get ahead of yourselves. These guys are going nowhere. To start your press conference with that and to stick your stake in the ground and to kind of just like shut off the potential for changes, to me, kind of just like set the tone for what's going to happen for the rest of their conversation. And to say that, hey, we're going to slam the door on any speculation, we trust these guys, we're going through with it, I just right away thought, well, this press conference is going to be this tone where they believe what they did was great and that they're going to be just one shot away next year. And everything we talked about yesterday was, hey, are those things on the table? Is everything on the table? Well, clearly the big things that we had speculated against are not on the table. No leadership changes are going to happen. So they're going to do the tinkering. They're going to do the little fringe work that we, most people really didn't feel like was the path to success. But to say that right off the hop, for me, was the most frustrating start to the postseason.
But that's just it to me, is how about a little humility? How about just an ounce of humility after you failed to close out yet another series where you had multiple opportunities? They preached killer instinct all last year. All last year. Just, hey, we need to be able to close these series out. They went down in games 4, 5, 6, and 7. Said it over and over and over again. They're acting as though they won a Stanley Cup or were right there from a Stanley Cup because they played a team that's won them before. Who cares that Tampa has won those two Stanley Cups? I don't understand the fascination of some pockets of the fan base or this organization in the sense of we were right there. It's like, that's one thing if you would have played Tampa in a conference final right there and you ended up going 7. It was the first round again. You haven't advanced. You haven't seen how this group goes beyond the first round. The idea that it's like your philosophy is working to this degree and that you're still quote-unquote banging at the door, that you wouldn't show an ounce of, hey, we really need to evaluate things. We need to take our time and we need to look at every aspect of what we're doing here and go over it with a fine-tooth comb. We possibly need to bring in an outside voice. We need to possibly bring in some other eyes. We need to consult as many people as possible. We want to make sure that this thing, we are getting it right, because this core, we've got to make sure that we hit on them because we know that they're special. We know that Austin Matthews is a 60-goal scorer. I don't understand why that's so hard. I don't understand why people going, hey, what do you view as the window? What's going on with Austin? Is smug answers of, he wants to be a Maple Leaf. He gets it. You don't get it. Or, hey, did you explore the potential of other coaches? Well, we think Sheldon Keefe by the end of the day is going to be one of those coaches. Oh, okay. I mean, so far, 3 straight exits where he's gotten out coached, and 2 of which by teams that were in the lottery the following year. But sure, like, fine. I guess this is the time to have these growing pains, is with one of the great cores that this organization has ever had. Again, it was just nothing but defiance. It was, they sat up there and it was like, it's us against the world. And that's not the job. No one's asking you to be in an adversarial position with the media and with the fans. And I'll be honest, I didn't think that the media, I don't think that they pressed anybody. I didn't think that anybody crossed any lines. I didn't think that anything was even close to that. I thought the tone was actually unbelievably respectful for these two guys, especially given everything else. Same thing with the players. Like, the media members that were down there was, I don't know what was going on, but there was a lot of the repeat same questions. There was somebody that kept asking the same thing about how you felt about respecting the handshake line. obviously, Marner, we're glad that he's doing well, but someone kept asking him, like, or the players, has anything ever happened to you like that?
Have you ever got your car jacked? Like, are you going to be more careful? Like, it's like, what are we...
Do you really...
Yes, of course they're going to be careful.
I didn't think that there was a lot of interesting stuff that was tried to dig out. I thought the tone was really respectful. Made me think about Philadelphia and places where people say are so hard to play, where you go, the media is tough. Look at what the Sixers have gone through with all the stuff with Embiid and Doc Rivers. Look at how it is in New York when teams are struggling, or Boston when teams are struggling. That's not the same thing. I don't want to hear about how Toronto media is so difficult anymore. Like, it's outrageous.
I would have loved to have somebody ask, what needs to change
to a
player? Just what needs to change instead of saying, how much do you believe in this core? Because I'm a hockey player. I know exactly what you say. Oh, we believe in the guys. Like, we're going to come back strong, have a great offseason. Like, it's all the same stuff that you say, and I have done it myself. But if you were to ask me what needs to change for you guys to win the Stanley Cup, like, that's a decision-making point for a player where you have to give an actual answer. Either you're going to say nothing needs to change and then you sound like an idiot, or you're going to say, hey, actually, I think we need to do these things. Like, just ask a question that isn't a lob or a softball of how much you love this team and how great your core is and how fun it is to play and how much you love each other. Like, we know that. We hear that every post-game interview all season long. This is supposed to be something different.
And so the way these things work, it's sometimes hard to get a follow-up question because there are a lot of questions and the media relations team is trying to do a good job of making sure everyone gets some in and it's done in a timely manner and all that stuff. There were two spots, though, where I really would have liked the ability to follow up or have someone follow up. And they were indicative, I think, of the overall tone. And one was Keith got asked about the power play and he was basically like, well, yeah, it was the lead again, but the other team has something to say about that. Would have loved to follow up on what tactically keeps failing.
What did you change
every year? And then Dubas had one answer about the cap crunch, and he was absolutely right in his answer, and he was being pretty honest and forthright, but he included the thing of, well, there were 17 teams that were over the cap with LTIR, and no follow-up on the decision to not LTIR Muzzin.
That's right.
Like, I would have loved a reflection on that of like, hey, is this a policy we're going to see from you guys going forward that if a guy can play, you won't LTIR him? Or were there discussions with Muzzin about doing that? Did you explore trades for that scenario? Like, if you're going to use that was one of the no excuses, but here's an excuse answers. And again, he's right. The salary cap exists and some teams have opportunity to do loopholes that other teams don't always have. But if you're going to say, well, 17 other teams use the LTIR to good effect, you kind of got to follow up of, well, why didn't you then? Because Pridham's there for a reason. You know what, like, the cap's not new. You're the team that does such a good job squeezing every extra ounce out of the cap in every other scenario. So I don't know. Again, it's hard having been at those. It can be a little tough to get follow-ups in. Sometimes media relations don't allow it. Sometimes someone jumps you, jumps in ahead of you before you can ask to follow.
Jump
but
you, they speed on you. They're like,
yeah,
that was my question.
That's what I do when I don't get my question. And it's like, all right, Eric, Kareen, get out of here. Yeet him across the room and get my Justin Champagne question in. But no, those are two spots where, like, I think those were indicative of, like, you obviously know this is a challenge. The answers weren't very, you know, they weren't very satisfying. And even if they're true. But so anyway, I don't know. It's a hard day as media, but to use your bullets over and over again on the same, like I don't know who it was that kept asking those same kind of two questions to everyone. So I apologize if it's someone at Harp Shop or someone I know or whatever. But like, those are always the rest of the media corps is eye rolling and groaning at them on a day like that, because every question is so high leverage and there's so little opportunity to get your questions in. That, like, yeah, okay, we get it. You're writing a May 18th story on this topic, but we got to get a whole offseason worth of stuff, and there's bigger stories today.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that it was the May 18th stories after that exit have nothing to do. Again, this is media, and this is everyone involved. Is what is the function of all of this? Like, who is this all for? Is this all for the million, like, guys, elite athletes, just to become millionaires and we adore them and give them whatever they... It's like, no, this is a fan-driven enterprise. This is run as an entertainment product for people who care about this sport in this city and around the globe, because the Leafs are an international brand now. So when you're a media member, your thought has to be, how am I serving the fan? Not how am I serving this player, how am I serving the story? It's how am I serving this fan base? And really, on May 18th is the question, what does the respect mean in the handshake line to you, especially when players are dismissing it? Is it, have you ever been in a carjacking before. Is it, how do you feel about Jack Campbell right now heading into his contract negotiation? Is
what
it,
do you think how guys you are going to say? Oh, yeah. I'm jealous Jack's going to get the bag, King.
Like, that's what I mean. I
love Spezza. I think he's a great leader. Like, yes, we know that. And that was the whole conversation basically in the postseason. Like, we know that. We love Spezza. He deserves all the flowers, but I want to know other things at the postseason.
And the
press
who is
conference.
This for? Like, it's not about just filling lines in the paper or getting your numbers in for filing on web or whatever. Like, and maybe this is because I came up through a blogging background where I didn't have access for a long time. So when I did have access, eventually it was coming more from a, hey, where's the gap? What have I been told over the years the gap is between what media is doing and what fans are looking for? But our job, their job, my job before this, your role in media is your conduit between the fans and the team they root for.
Correct.
You're supposed to shed more light. You're supposed to, I mean, you're not, hey, Twitter, what question do you want me to ask in this press conference? No, but you're supposed to have a pulse of how your audience is feeling and what they're interested in. And yeah, look, I do all those stories over the course of an offseason. I'll do a, well, hey, here's Malachi Flynn talking about how good a leader Fred and Kyle were as he gets ready to take the backup point guard role. But that's a mid-July story. That's not a day after the season end story.
They're going on 20 years of not having made the playoffs. This is now consecutive years where you could argue they're among the most disappointing in franchise history, given the parameters of the team, the circumstances around the team, the makeup of the team, the goals of the team. The entire year was about killer instinct, and they didn't win a series, and the front office went up there and said, we think we accomplished that goal, essentially. Like, I just don't understand, again, the cognitive dissonance here where you can say we're not going to make excuses but not take any ownership really over this loss. How you can say you share in frustration, but the only frustration that you display is when you're asked questions about your group. I just don't understand how you can be so disconnected from the fans in the city. And that's my frustration today, is you need to have people who care about the fans and not just about themselves. And that was the way that I felt watching that. And yeah, that's just my opinion, but that's what I give here on this show, is my opinion. And my opinion was, is that that looked like a group of guys who are tired of being criticized and who have made what is usually one of the bigger mistakes that we all make, which is when we become defensive. When we start to feel like we are being questioned and we double down on mistakes that we're making and we start to feel like we are the ones being hard done by, we make ourselves martyrs. And when that happens, and everyone should be able to relate to that, right? Like, everybody has a little piece of that within them. And that's usually when you look back and you say, damn, I really wasn't hearing what people were saying about me. I wasn't really being reflective. I wasn't really operating as my best self because I thought it was me against the world, when in reality it wasn't about me. And that's what those guys look like, that it was all about them when they stood at that podium and talked about their resolve and their plan and their philosophy and their doubling down and their lack of concern over what other people think.
And look, again, I don't want the front office to operate emotionally come
Who
late
does?
June, come early July. You part of the reason you trust this front office so much is that they have been able to operate above that emotional level for the most part, and you trust them a little bit to take that frustration and, you know, take a deep breath and then look at ways to actually improve. And I want that from them. But again, the day after, like, one of your offseason moves is going to be in the first round of the draft. I just clicked on a random name around where the Leafs pick on the central scouting list. Michael Buchinger from Markham, Ontario, was born 5 days after the Leafs last won a playoff series. You are about to draft players who weren't alive the last time that you won a playoff series.
Drafting that guy. Local kid. Yeah, he's definitely being drafted.
Yeah, Guelph Storm standout. Let's go, 519, the region. But no, like if that doesn't hammer home to you how long this has been running, and it's not like, I know that there was some, Dubas had a comment about how the other guy, like, these guys shouldn't carry. What I would say is, I don't think this group carries the burden of 18 or 55 years. And that's true in that room, but the franchise carries that burden. And these guys now carry the burden of 6 years of an historic stretch of getting
bounced. Can you carry the years you've been here? Can you guys carry those years? Like, can you act like those years count? Can you act like the disappointments of the years prior have actually happened and that this isn't happening in a vacuum? Like, if you had lost to Tampa Bay, this is the first time, who cares?
Yeah. And I didn't want Dubas to sit there and be like, I'm so pissed off, I'm going to – heads are going to roll. Like, that's not him, and that's not how you operate the offseason. But to – I don't know. There was a little bit of a disconnect of what is the point of this day and what are you saying? I don't know. It felt like they – That felt like a board meeting, not a end of season press conference.
I think that we're doing the inventing of a guy because this is what happens with social media. This is kind of the way to counter something is you go, well, what did you want them to say, right? And you go, well, I just told you what I wanted them to say. I wanted them to strike a chord with the emotions of the fan base to a degree. I wanted them to say that not – hey, everything is on the table, the way that they said it, which is they're like, oh, we evaluate things. It's the same as every offseason. It's business as usual. You go, okay, all right, fine. Business as usual. There's no added impetus here to know that you still came up short for the goals that you outlined, to the fact that you have gotten, again, not even a quarter of the way through the Stanley Cup playoffs. Okay. You're not going to show any, hey, we have to evaluate this as a group and evaluate every part of what we're doing. And we understand why people are frustrated, and we're frustrated too, and show some of that frustration instead of the defensiveness. Like, it's really not that hard to think about how you're going to act when you're being asked these questions, right? Like, I don't know. I just think that it was tough. I think it was a really tough day, really tough look for those guys. No one wants them to go up there and just serve people platitudes and try to fake emotion. No one wants them to say that they're trading everybody. And, of course, a lot of the things that they said are rational, and that is their job, and that is exactly the expectation. But that should be there. And asking for more at this point as a fan, like asking for them to hit that note when, again, they have yet to get out of the first round, I don't think is an unreasonable expectation at this point, to be honest. Let's take a break. Let's come back. And what do we have today on the A-list?
Tell me you got something positive, A-list.
I have lots of positive things. Would you like to take part in a roast? Not the Michael Scott roast, but the roast of the greatest. Boom, roasted. That's on the other side of the break. It's the A-List. It's morning show. 4-7-5-9, The Fan.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan morning shows worth a 590, The Fan. It's hump day. The vibes were a little bit low in the morning. A little bit of angst that we have, deservedly so, towards the media day yesterday. So let's bring some positivity with the A-List.
Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
We love betting on this show. And you can always tune in to our 8:30 segment, The Wake and Rake, for your daily best bets. But here's one, a little early bet for you guys. Tiger Woods shared a story about John Daly during the 2007 PGA Championship at Southern Hills, which is also where this week's PGA tournament is held. In 2007, it was held in August in Oklahoma, which can be known to be quite warm, and it was over 100 degrees Fahrenheit for most of the weekend. This is important context for your bet. Being so hot out, the golfers wearing pants, they need to hydrate more than usual with water, as you would think. But John Daly, we know this, loves a good Diet Coke. So, fill in the blank. Tiger Woods says that John Daly drank blank Diet Cokes during a 107-degree round?
I'm going to guess 9. One for every
I'm going higher. I'm going to guess... it's got to be an absurd number. I know, Blake, that that is an absurd number.
Nine Diet Cokes over 4 or 5 hours is an absurd number.
No, I'm
going to
say...
What are the PGA regulations around bathroom breaks?
No, but I don't think it's 9 is enough that where... You can take as many as you want. I think that it's going to be... I'm going to go with 16.
13.
Oh,
13 Diet Cokes in one round.
Had to be double digits.
Of golf.
It had to, it had to be. Yeah, it had to be double
digits. For context, he finished tied for 32nd in the PGA Championship, and Tiger Woods went on to win by 2 shots.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe
diet difference was
probably
diet
comes
Coke.
Comes with the Diet Coke, just absolutely chugging Diet Cokes, and apparently smoking a couple of cigarettes as well. So elite athlete, of course.
So apparently in the 2019 U.S. Open, there was a disqualification and a dispute around violation of bathroom rules by Skylar Fox. So John, I'm very curious what John Daly's bathroom plan is as you crush a Diet Coke and a half.
I don't know how much you pee. Holes. I don't know how much you pee after you drink a Diet Coke.
Well, if you're drinking a bunch of water in 107 degree, then you're probably not doing it a lot because you need that hydration. But
that's what I'm saying.
Maybe he's like
caffeinated drinks are diuretics.
Right. I don't know. I just wouldn't. I don't think of that. What's the if you guys had one drink that you thought was the one you could do the most? Like if you were entering a contest, you had to go. You're like they're like
that
you're
was my
18.
Question as well.
Yeah. What's the drink? What are you going for?
But it has to be like a type of pop, not like a Gatorade, right?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Fine, a pop. I was going to say any drink. What's your just favorite drink? Like non-alcoholic, I was going to say. Like you can't be like, hey.
Water doesn't count, A-list.
Yeah, I think everyone would choose
Lights.
Beer. You're like, hey, you're in a contest.
I would probably go with, if I had to drink 13 of something during a round of golf, I would probably go with iced tea. Because I think it's refreshing. It's less bad for you mentally. You think, well, this is iced tea. It's like, it's tea, right? It's a little sugary, but not too carbonated. I could probably drink 13 iced teas if I put myself.
Just make sure you're drinking the Canadian version of iced tea
and
not the U.S. version of iced tea.
I lived in the States for long enough to know that the iced tea down there
is
disgusting.
You're having like a little Nestea attack if you have 13 of the U.S. iced teas.
The first time you drink American iced tea, it's offensive, no? Like, you're like, what have you done?
Oh, it's disgusting. You go to, like, a diner, you're like, I'll have an iced tea. And then you are, they're, like, sweetened. You're like, well, probably. It's still awful.
Yeah. No, I just, it's, you look like they pranked you. Like, that's how you feel. It's that, hey, can I get iced tea?
That's too much tuna.
Yeah. This is a prank. This feels like a prank that you bring this to me. Okay. My answer for this is, can I count carbonated water cans like the
because I would have said bubbly as well.
Okay, well, okay, because I have
non-brand
recently...
specific carbonated water, Ailish.
But I am a big now can of carbonated water guy. Flavored, I feel like, is closer to pop. I've never been a pop guy. I used to, when I was growing up, I loved root beer for a hot minute. Now I can't have even a sip of a root beer. Does nothing for me. I love Dr. Pepper. Now I can't have a sip of a Dr. Pepper.
It's spicy.
I love still having a Coke or a Pepsi at a movie theater when you're having snacks, like in the big fountain pop.
Yes.
Like that's great
to me.
Something
different about the fountain pops.
Yeah, and like I've always said, this is the only other Coke I want is if you go visit someone that's over 65 years old and they have a downstairs basement fridge and they go, would you like a Coca-Cola from this fridge? And I go, yep, you bet your ass I would. There's good Cokes in those fridges. That's an elite place to get a pop. But I don't think that I'm at all a pop guy anymore. But the bubbly thing, someone said that's an old person move now, and I went, huh, okay. Like you're
no
my
way.
Well, I never had any affinity for sparkling water or carbonated water whatsoever. I've hated it my whole life.
Spicy water.
Tastes like TV static. That's how it feels. TV static.
All I know is that I never liked them at all, and now I like fight myself not to drink 3 cans of that type of water every day.
So that's your choice.
But does that make me old? Is that an old person thing?
I like it. I think even like right now when it's getting warmer, I'm like, do I want another glass of water? Why don't I have a little sparkly treat?
I used to think it was for pregnant ladies. You know, like, I'm having a drink. I'm having a bubbly. That's what you go, okay, yeah, whatever, float your boat there. I'll just
weird niche market there.
Well, it's just that's what I thought is sparkling water is for pregnant ladies because it's how you mimic drinking alcohol.
It's a maternity drink, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a maternity drink.
Maybe
and now here
pregnant.
I am having – yeah, I've been trying for a while now. Like, I make a lot of attempts. Yeah,
Blake, what would be yours?
I don't really know. I only drink water, coffee, and beer. Those are the only three beverages.
I know that. Come on. But you have to pick one.
I don't like pop.
If I had to pick one, you know what it would actually
water.
Pop? I would pick 7-Up or Sprite. Because I think
I would
that's
go ginger ale if
drink.
I had to.
Ooh, ginger ale. Good one. But it makes me think that
I've
got a tummy ache.
Blake's coming off an illness where I had a couple ginger ales, and that's the only time I drink pop is movie theater. I'll have a couple sips of a small fountain Coke because it feels like going to the movies. I don't know why. And then if I'm sick, I want ginger ale, and I want my mom to leave it out in a little bowl because she thinks that that flat ginger ale helps you better for some reason, even though the carbonation feels so nice.
Denise,
I don't know. It's like an old wives' tale that letting the ginger ale go flat is better for you or something.
Denise,
I don't know.
This is not it. This is not the one.
Denise, we need to talk.
Your son with a bowl of ginger ale as you, like pouring your son a bowl of ginger ale. Is not the one. I think ginger ale
so
without
you guys
is
answer
disgusting.
how many cans of a beverage can you drink? I will answer how many bowls of flat ginger ale.
I think the most cans of pop I could drink over the course of, because let's say this is like what we'll say 4 hours.
4 hours.
I think I could drink one Sprite every 1 hour. I don't think I could drink four Cokes. I think that like Coke makes your teeth want to fall out, right? When you drink,
are we allowed to brush our teeth between Cokes? Then we're moving forward.
I would choose Sprite. Because it's refreshing, Sprite or 7-Up, whichever is your brand and choice. They're the exact same to me. No.
Sprite's got the Grant Hill, the old Grant Hill Pistons soda machine in my high school. It's got to be Grant Hill Sprite.
Yeah, Sprite has better marketing, but I would say that I could drink 4 or 5 of those, I think, in 4 hours. If I was pressed, I could drink more, but I think that comfortably I could drink 4 on a hot day if they kept being given to me. It was my only available drink.
Agreed. Quick text before we move on to the next A-list item. Meredith Aniji, my girl. Iced tea is sugar and caffeine. Root beer is actually a healthier move because it's got less caffeine if we're binging. Not into the health for this one, but root beer is a good option.
We also have a text from Denise Ndrumbo, my mom.
Oh, Denise.
She texted in chocolate milk. Which absolutely not.
My favorite beverage
that I didn't list, but you would be so bloated. And like, I was imagining this is another 107-degree day. Like, this is legitimately
like
the Anchorman
Burgundy.
Bit. Milk was a bad choice. My mom's she gives me flat ginger ale, and then she's trying to funnel chocolate milk down my gullet at 107-degree. Man, guys, I had a weird childhood.
Yeah, clearly. Look how you turned out.
I once watched a friend almost not make it to a Leafs game that I bought tickets for because he drank too much chocolate milk that day. I'm not even kidding. He loved chocolate milk. He drank too much, and then he felt sick before he went to the game because he drank too much milk.
Was he 12 years old?
He was 19, but it was bad. It was a bad look. Yeah, milk would be a bad choice.
Do you remember those old chocolate milk commercials of like, they were basically filming them like at a YMCA where people were playing basketball,
right,
and then
healthy.
They would ask them after about refueling with chocolate milk, and they like got in a lot of trouble for like lying about the health benefits of chocolate milk. My pal Stu was in one of those. He just like got randomly asked about chocolate milk for one of those commercials. It was so weird.
Well, I'm not sure how to segue into this. This athlete probably drinks chocolate milk after a game. What is a week without more Tom Brady media attention? You know, every week there's something, right? Brady has signed up for a new Netflix special called The Greatest Roast of All Time, Groat, where he'll be the first subject to be roasted in the series. To quote my good friend Marshawn Lynch, "I'm just here so I won't get fined." Tom Brady quote. The series will film next year, but there's no word yet on who will be the roast master, but you can assume there'll be lots of Deflategate, avocado diets, kissing his kids on the lips jokes tossed in there. Will you be watching this?
and his dad on the lips. He doesn't just kiss his kids. Yeah. He also kisses his papa on the lips. Yeah, Tom Brady, if you... I think that there should be plenty of material here. But yeah, it's probably going to be pretty predictable. The Blakegate, specifically leaving the Patriots, whatever. Is it... Is this a Comedy Central Presents kind of thing? Like, is this the same roasters from... I will say that I enjoy a good roast. I really do. I think that there have been some great moments. We've talked about a couple of great comics that passed away in this past year. Gilbert Godfrey and Bob Saget.
Norm MacDonald, the king of the roast.
Yeah, exactly. Bob Saget, Norm MacDonald, Gilbert Gottfried, all those guys have had iconic moments there. I think a roast is great if you know what you're going into and you appreciate it. And if you're a celebrity of Tom Brady's magnitude, I think that you should be able to handle this pretty well. And
he's
this
also going to be involved in the production, and he's going to find a way to be, you know, involved in how this is. He's going to be an executive producer.
Yeah, if that's the case, Tom, my advice to you would be let it be completely on holds barred. Because if you have any type of semblance of this is lame, then it's going to look bad on you. I will always believe that Justin Bieber's image started to turn around when he allowed himself to get roasted. I know that that's a deep cut, but I really believe that that dude was in a horrific state when it came to the way he was perceived by everyone. And when he decided to get roasted, it was the first like act of, this kid kind of gets it. And from that point forward, it feels like it's been nothing but W's for him. And not that
gotta
Tom Brady needs that.
Got to be able to be in on the joke.
That's it.
From laughing at you to laughing with you. Exactly.
Yeah, and that's just it. And so if I'm Tom Brady, this would actually be a great way of owning some of these things that they show you they really don't bother you is, let people completely go as deep as they want on everything.
Love it. If you've put sunblock on a window, then you might be Michael Scott. Looking forward to seeing if they put any Michael Scott references in the roast. You know that I love that.
It's probably the only show Tom Brady's watched, just like you. So
surprised. That's why I love him.
This whole project came about because he watched that episode for the 30th time the other day.
If you're Tom Brady, you can't be Michael Scott. You know, like you can't cry.
You can't let it bother you and storm off stage and then go watch Pigeons in the Park. Okay, last item on the A-list. We love Tuesdays at home for the Toronto Blue Jays because it's Loony Dog Night. And being Toronto's only source for live in-game betting on Loony Dog consumption, myself, I'm always obviously on the hunt for tips and tricks to improve my Loony Dog intake next time. There was an absolute...
Did you have like
beauty.
10, so you really need
no,
to
I
improve?
Had,
you're doing good.
4.5. There was an absolute beauty at the game last night. He made it on the broadcast. My jaw dropped when I saw his setup. So he had a custom ketchup and mustard dispensing hat, like those beer hats with the two straws. He must have made his own, but with the condiments stuck in there. He's wearing a custom Calgary Flames Toronto Blue Jays crossover t-shirt that he probably got made at like the 10-minute t-shirts on Yonge Street, especially for that game. The A++ of this is the shirt is red with yellow lettering, which means he could spill all the condiments on his shirt. You never know. So if maximizing his efficiency, not waiting in line for extra condiments, and not worrying about the comfort and the worrying of spills and dribbles, elite 10 out of 10 Loony Dog consumption.
Disagree.
No, A-list just had a couple beers at the game and saw a concession stand and thought that it was a dude. You just described a concession stand.
Here's what I will say about this. One is, first, buying a hot dog, part of the joy is using the condiments at the stand. Yeah. So bringing your own condiments is...
Let me tell you that now it's in those tiny little packets and they're in like awful. A little bin and you grab like 15 hot dogs and you have to rip the little thing open and it squirts everywhere.
You don't have to grab 15 hot dogs. No, should not frame it like that. You have to grab 15 hot dogs.
The point is well taken there. That the ketchup packet versus the squeeze bottle
much different situation.
Oh my God. It's truly it's a difference maker in terms of what I get a hot dog is that the pump is garbage.
I
want to
push
too.
Down on that thing.
Oh, I don't. I want the squeeze bottle. I want to squeeze the bottle
down.
Well,
they're never going to do that. They haven't done that at the game in forever, right?
Yeah. Well, that's why you do it outside. But I'm just saying that loony dog situation here where you're like, okay, squeezing a packet and anything is awful. But what I will tell you is this. Anybody who puts ketchup on a hot dog or on a sausage is a war criminal.
What?
Yeah,
no way.
Oh, yeah. Baby. Like, if I...
On those
you,
little dry loony dogs, you're not putting hot... oh, no.
Mustard only.
By the way,
do you,
did
it's
you
like,
guys
do you
see
know
the
how to eat one
appearance?
Or not? And how you eat one is with mustard only. It's the only correct answer. Yeah, absolutely. If you put ketchup on a hot dog... You're
different
a child.
For a sausage. There's a complete difference. A hot dog, you need to load that thing up to get it down your gullet, dip it in water, like Joey Chestnut.
For again, you're the foremost expert on this, I will say. But I'm just saying that if it's one of those things where if I'm with someone and they put ketchup on a hot dog or a sausage, I will never respect you the same way again.
Wow.
The respect, it's not going to be the same. I'm not going to. Like not know you anymore. That's crazy, but the respect is
he just called
not
him a war criminal.
Yeah.
All right. So there was a time in last night's game that a plate appearance got interrupted because one of the like paramedic vehicles was driving by and the sirens were going. And my first thought was, oh no, Ailish had too many hot dogs.
I wasn't there at the game.
I'm just kidding, Ailish.
Okay, just mentioned that I might have had too many beers.
I'm building to a segue with this. As it turns out, one of the Seattle Mariners had actually thrown the ball into the crowd, like giving a ball away, and it hit someone and injured them. It was that kind of night for the Seattle Mariners last night at the Rogers Center. Let's take a break. When we come back, Jose Berríos, not on the show, but he's back looking like
that'd be nice.
A number three starter. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.